No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here in the middle of the week on a Wednesday. Good to be back, and hope that you guys are all enjoying your Wednesday. There's a lot to talk about today, but we've got a great guest to kind of round out the second half of the show here. But first, let's talk about a little bit about what's going on following the Colts' loss to the Steelers. A lot of it has to do with Jacoby Brissett and the way that the concussion protocol is being implemented and how effective it is. You know, a lot of people calling it out. I put a links piece together the other day up on StampedeBlue.com, and basically there was plenty of scrutiny to go around. People being upset that, you know, that he had seen two neurological people on the sideline. One, the Colts doctor, and then two, the individual that is supposed to be there, that's supposed to be independent of anybody. And both of them cleared him to play. Of course, you remember Tolzien going out on the field and then Brissett, you know, going out there and basically exchanging with him. And you know, at post-game, then he has the concussion symptoms. And this isn't something that's necessarily new. In fact, when it happened, it reminded me of when Andrew Luck had it. It's a very similar situation, maybe 2 years ago, I think. And I believe it was the Tennessee Titans game in which he actually injured himself, if I'm not mistaken, the shoulder. But there was a lot of scrutiny, obviously, then because it was Andrew Luck. Now, not so much because it's Brissett, but it's still there simply because the guy was seen twice by two different guys and then went out on the field, but then post-game started suffering some of the symptoms. I don't think that that's necessarily, you know, an oddity or anything like that. However, with the way that Russell Wilson came off the field and then back on the field, basically what, you know, seemed like himself checking himself and stuff, that one's still actually under investigation. So I think that when you add those two situations together, it maybe makes the Jacoby Brissett situation seem more relevant and more of an issue, I suppose. But honestly, it didn't, you know, itself was just a matter of, you know, probably time, I suppose. I've only, you know, had a couple concussions myself, but none of them were, you know, we're talking 20 years ago. So we're looking at, you know, a complete difference in what those symptoms are, you know. But you know, just kind of strange. Definitely being there's some interest from the league for sure. There's no doubt about it. And that kind of leaves a lot to be determined as far as the argument and the conversation behind it. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I don't think that the Colts or anything with the Jacoby Brissett situation will be an issue. I just simply think that it's being brought up so much because Russell Wilson's before was quite, you know, quite strange the way that went down. So let's move on. But we will have Will Carroll on for the second half of the show today. He will be here to kind of run us through a lot of that. Very interesting guy, very smart guy. And he will be able to give us a lot more of what we're looking for in that conversation and a little bit of, you know, a conversation about Luck's shoulder, nothing, you know, too in-depth or anything like that. I know that a lot of people want to put that conversation behind us, but he's such a, you know, it's such an obvious, you know, part of the Colts' future that, you know, you got to ask the guy, especially with some of the things going on with Will's business and what's going on with that. So that'll be a great, great way to end the show. I can promise you that. Will's a super smart guy, and that'll be a lot of fun. You know, Brett Mock put up a story the other day about, you know, some of the priority free agents that the Colts need to re-sign. And this was really, you know, kind of good timing, being that it's at the bye. And there's a lot of guys that we're looking at now, and that's ultimately when the Colts are in the season that they are with, you know, very little hope of making the playoffs, which is all but diminished right now. we're looking at guys like, okay, who are we bringing back next year when this transition kind of hits the second wave, you know, and how we're supposed to try to move on from this. And, you know, obviously he's got Rashawn Melvin on that, and I couldn't agree with him more for that. Melvin has been fantastic this year. You know, with Vontae out and all the other things that come with it, we've seen some pretty good corner play between him and Pierre Desir, and Melvin has just, you know, exceeded all expectations as far as I'm concerned. Many of you know that he was one of my, you know, favorites last year, but he was still getting up to speed, I guess you could say, as far as like in his own growth. And he was just a guy who I thought could start for a few weeks, maybe half the season, while Quincy Wilson got, you know, himself acclimated to the game. Well, things have happened, obviously, and Rashawn's played, and Rashawn's been really, really good. By far, I think you could say the Colts' best corner. Even with Vontae Davis when he was in, and now that he's gone, he definitely is. As I mentioned, Desir, you know, Pierre Desir, another guy who's available next year, has played great. I mean, he's been in position. It's weird because he's given up a couple touchdowns. He's given up some deep balls, but he is in position on everything. I mean, he's had some hellacious matchups with A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown, even some Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, last week. And there's a lot to take from that. He's going to do nothing but get better. He's a nice long guy, 6'2". You know, he's going to help, definitely, as far as I'm concerned. And I remember, like I said before, I remember him being kind of a high part of the Colts, or not the Colts, but draft Twitter's kind of rundown. A lot of people were really interested in what he brought and thought he was going to be a good draft pick. He's been shopped around and moved around, and I think that he could possibly have found, you know, a nice little home here in Indianapolis for a little while. Also, Barkevious Mingo was on that list. Jack Muhort was also on there, and you know, if I'm being realistic here, as much as I think Jack Muhort has the ability to be a very, very good offensive lineman and could be almost pivotal piece moving forward, his injuries are so debilitating, it's hard for me to want to do that. Barkevious Mingo, on the other hand, he's a role-playing guy. He's never going to be a dominant pass rusher, I don't think. And with that, I think that you bring him back if you've got a space for him. If you don't have space for him, then, you know, you move on. You know, maybe you know, unhappily about it, but nevertheless, you move on because you've got people that can fill that position who are better. If you don't, Barkevious Mingo's a great dude. Special teams, he fights, he's good in coverage. I think he's a good ball player. I think he's a real good ball player. But it really depends on where the Colts transition is next year as far as that. Because ultimately, like I said, he is a role player. And if you find a role player that's younger and as good or better that can do that, basically you're hoping on his, or relying on his experience to set him apart from anybody who, when everything else is even. So that would be, right now I would say yes, bring him back because he would be a great transition piece for another year. Whether or not that happens, you know, I don't think that I would like get all upset about it if they didn't bring him back. However, it would be a wise idea, in my opinion, to bring him back to kind of help move that transition along again for another year. But like I said, Muhort's injuries kind of leave me hanging a little bit as far as what to expect. I know that he's waiting on the deal, you know, of course, hoping to get that extra deal, see if he's going to stay in Indy or not. But you know, his injuries, like I said, are a real issue moving forward. And the Colts are going to make a concerted effort, I would assume, to really try to strap in this offensive line over the offseason. I think that they've got to do that. They've seen that this is not, you know, obviously an easy thing to do. I think that some of their moves have been better than what, you know, they've had, considering the injuries, considering how much swapping and stuff they've had to do. But, you know, they've got to get this offensive line in front of Andrew Luck for 2018 all set in stone and find at least two more guards. I would say at least a guard and probably another tackle as well they just can't wait around any longer. So I thought that was an interesting piece, and I thought you guys might want to go check it out as well, kind of see some of Brett's thought process behind that. Finally, the Colts also activate Clayton Gethers from the PUP and waive Josh Perry. Gethers is coming back. That is so awesome to see. They say that he's leaner, you know, faster. I hope that that doesn't necessarily doesn't like diminish any of his power, because that's kind of what he's there for. He's that mixture of coverage and tackling ability and, you know, just everything involved, his ability. I mean, they were talking about him as a linebacker, you know, trying to, because the Colts linebackers last year were so awful, or just whatever, constantly trying to improve the roster, and he's a guy that's been moved around. He's a good nickel corner, actually. They don't need him there, I don't think, right now because of Hairston. But it'll be a great thing to see him back on the field. I just simply can't wait to see if he just comes back and impresses us all. Now, we have to remember, honestly, what he is. He's a piece. And he's not, you know, by any means, I don't think at this point, any Pro Bowl safety right now. But he is definitely an influx of talent, whereas we've lost Malik Hooker. Butler has not been, you know, real great this year. Mathias Farley's been a nice development and has been improving and better in coverage, as well as being kind of that strong side guy to come up and lay the wood a little bit when it's necessary. And he's been good at that. But the Colts could really use Gethers right now. That secondary is kind of shaping up and forming into place, and Gethers could really make that secondary something real interesting to watch, finishing out the season and finding, seeing it all kind of come together in 2018, and how that would really round out this secondary and be probably one of the better secondaries, if not one of the best secondaries, that the Colts have had in several years. I think, I mean, when you look back on the old ones, you know, you had those that two-year stretch where Vontae was really, really good, and the rest of the defense seemed to be, you know, pieces here, pieces there, injuries all over the place between Toller and Patrick Robinson, and just other guys, you know, being pushed in and out of the lineup, in, like I said, injuries. It just has not worked out. And if you get this group together and kind of keep them healthy, I think you've seen that there's a lot of physicality, a lot of, you know, challenging the play at the point of it, at the point of the catch. And you see that there's some run support here and some ability to jar a ball loose at the catch point as well. So that is going to be fun, I think, watching the second half of the season for that. You know, if for no other reason, like I said, we have to start evaluating these guys to see who's coming back, how this team kind of rolls into shape, what moves are real necessary versus moves that could be just, you know, a helpful, you know, role-playing piece or something like that that kind of would be in use. And there'll be a weakness or two or three, possibly even, still next year. So what they have to do is they have to find those pieces that can mitigate those weaknesses into not being weaknesses, as opposed to trying to put so much capital draft-wise or off-season free agent signing-wise to where they have to try to make that a strength, whereas they leave something as just an unblemished or an absolute weakness. That just simply won't work. So the Colts are going to have to try to round all that out. That's always fun to watch the process of that and kind of see how it comes together. But, folks, I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back with Will Carroll. We got a great conversation for you guys. I just was really interested in everything that he had to say, and I hope that you guys are too, and kind of timely because of the concussion issue. Like I said, we'll talk about Andrew Luck's shoulder a little bit, and we'll talk about, you know, the Colts and kind of, you know, maybe how Will believes that they kind of screwed something up. But was it that they screwed up the injury, or was it something else? And I think you guys will be interested to see what he's got to say about it. So hang tight. We'll be right back with Will Carroll. And thanks for coming back to the Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. On the line right now, we've got Will Carroll. You guys can catch him on Twitter at Injury Expert. Will, thank you for joining us today, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Certainly, has been a lot of injury talk with the Colts, whether it's been Andrew Luck all season, Vontae Davis' situation, this Jacoby Brissett situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm just glad that so many fans are finally catching up and starting to realize just how important sports medicine, sports science, and injuries and injury prevention really are to the results of the Colts. If they didn't figure out with Manning, they're certainly figuring it out this year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Colts, it seems like the Colts year in and year out are one of those teams that continue to be bit by the injury bug. And it's always kind of, with the most, the most high ranking, so to speak, players on the team. But it always seems like they're down depth. They're down a couple starters here or there. It just seems to never stop. But
that's part of the problem. I think, you know, when we take a look at the results, mm-hmm. and I always say this has to be about the results. We don't measure, you know, Chuck Pagano. I can say a lot of really good things about Chuck Pagano and what he's done for the community and what I think of him as a person. But as a coach, his record kind of stinks, and that likely means he's looking for a job in the not-too-distant future. Same thing for anybody else. You know, if you don't get podcast rankings and downloads, they're going to replace you at some point. We understand that. Mm-hmm. And it ought to be the same for a medical staff. You shouldn't lose your job because you have a bad year. You shouldn't lose your job unless you're A, incompetent, or B, your results merit it. And when you take a look at the Colts medical staff, like you said, it seems like it's year after year because it is. Mm-hmm. When you take a look at them over the last decade, they're the single worst team. They're 32nd out of 32. If your defensive backs were 32nd out of 32, you'd fix it in the draft. You'd hire a new coach. So at some point, I hope that the Ursays really take a hard look at this and say, we can make a difference. Teams have said, you know, we're going to put our foot down. We're going to make this an emphasis, and we're going to turn things around. Philadelphia went from one of the worst teams consistently in the 20s, and now they're number one. And this is over the point of 5 years now. So just the focus of bringing in a sports science department, a sports medicine department that had a renewed focus and more assets really, really made a difference. And I think the Colts could do the same thing.
So it's not a throwaway comment then. I mean, that's actually something that would actually, I mean, everybody says, man, the Colts need new, medical staff and stuff like that. And I think that some people kind of play it off as though, you know, it's kind of like, well, maybe, but you know, that this happens. It's the NFL and stuff like that. But that's something that you think that it could definitely show a vast improvement in health then.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and they can't get any worse, unfortunately. You know,
right.
Again, I don't want this to be personal. This is about results. This isn't that they're not hardworking or qualified or trying their best with the best of intentions. But the fact is, results have to count at some point. And when you're 32nd out of 32 consistently year after year, I think last year they were 28th overall. But again, you know, that's an up year. I think at some point you really have to take a look organizationally. Are people listening? Are you drafting athletes that tend to get hurt? I mean, Malik Hooker was a guy who was a talented athlete with no injury history. Unfortunately, these kind of injuries are going to happen. But what were they doing to make sure they reduce them as much as possible? We're never going to get to zero. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a lot more that organization can do. Not saying there's not good steps, not saying anything personally about them, but man, for everything, for every area of an organization, I think results have to count.
Absolutely. I agree. I just, you know, obviously the rest of us aren't in the medical field, so we're kind of like, I don't know, you know, maybe these guys can just stretch them a different way and everything will be great, you know?
I think what we have to do is take a really hard look at what we're doing today, because sports science is a brand new field. We're a decade behind Europe. They've been giving degrees, and Australia, it seems like if you talk to half the sports scientists in American sport, they're Australian. And it's because they were that far ahead of us, and we're seeing that. Team Real Madrid, one of the big teams over in European soccer, they saw that they were losing some of their best athletes to hamstring injuries. So they went out and did multi-million dollar research studies with multiple places on what can we do to prevent this. And they found the best thing was a hamstring injury prevention program called the Nordic Program. And Nordic Curls, you'll see it referred to a number of ways, but usually just shorthand, it's the Nordic Program. And they started doing this, and they saw an 80% reduction. There's an ACL prevention program from U.S. Soccer here. Dr. Bert Mandelbaum, who I had on my podcast a couple weeks ago, talked about 75 to 80% reductions in ACLs in a soccer program. Why would we not be doing that? The Colts, every other team, high school teams, again, this is some place where for a relatively small investment, we're talking about, you know, $1 million would be about $1 million more than they're spending on research right now. And again, this is not a knock on the Colts. This is the NFL in general.
Right.
You know, a couple of years ago with the concussion and the head, I forget what the science program was, but focused on concussions, they gave out $30 million. $30 million is a lot of money. I'm not sneezing at it. But that was it. That was basically their entire research budget. And this is an organization that's pumping through billions of dollars and a large amount of profit. If you just put part of that back in, you're going to get huge results, not just hopefully for concussions, which are very, very important, but for ACL prevention, braces, pads. There's all these things we could do, you know, even if it just comes down to helping youth sports get better equipment. There's so much more they could do, and I'd love to see the Colts lead the way because there's no more passionate fan base. There's no more passionate ownership. I think it's too perfect a fit for them not to do it.
Man, that's crazy that you say that. I mean, because, I mean, ACL, MCL stuff, it seems like those injuries are prevalent throughout the league, and they're not always an impact injury from a helmet to the side of the knee or just something like that. A lot of these are non-impact injuries. That seems like it would be just total ignorance not to try to use that in as much as you could.
Exactly. I always think back to Reggie Wayne's injury where he's running a crossing pattern like he had a million times before. And he, you know, turf monster jumped up, he twisted just the wrong way and his knee popped. And, you know, we don't know if that was it. Though I just was reading about a new invention. It's an app on an iPhone along with an ultrasound wand. And it's as accurate as the ones that we're using now on ligaments. I mean, anybody that's ever had a baby or seen a baby knows those ultrasound pictures that they take. Mm-hmm. It's twice the resolution of that. And it's an iPhone app that costs $200 for the wand. We could have those on every sideline so we could check. Hey, Reggie, how's your knee feel? Yep, ligament looks good. What kind of, I mean, next thing you tell me there's jetpacks and flying cars.
I was going to say.
But with ACLs, it is the non-contact injuries that are problematic. And people often shrug their shoulders and say, well, you know, it's part of the game. There's nothing we can do. There is. There's a lot we can do.
That's crazy. Will, for those of the listeners that don't really know what you do, can you give us a quick version of what exactly you do?
Yeah, for 20 years, I've been a sports writer at ESPN, Bleacher Report, a couple other places, focused on injuries and sports medicine. And I've been lucky enough to tell the stories of some of those great doctors and athletic trainers and rehab professionals and sports scientists to tell their story along the way and try to explain, you know, what the heck is a non-contact ACL injury? Why do they happen? You know, what is a Lisfranc fracture? All those things. I kind of functioned as a translator and a focuser. I wanted people to understand just how important this was. And like I said, that it doesn't have to be as prevalent as it is now, that we can do better. Over the last year, I've been working with a company called Motus, M-O-T-U-S. You can find us at motusglobal.com to find out more information about our products. And it gave me a chance to go from talking about injuries to actually doing something about it. We're the world's leader in biomechanical wearables. We have sensors that hook onto people. You might have seen motion capture like they do for the movies or video games where they suit somebody up and they have all the markers. We do that. We do that for video games. And it's great technology. But we wanted to take that and put it on the field because, unfortunately, we can't take those million-dollar cameras and put them down on the floor of Lucas Oil Stadium, one of those big guys would break something. We developed sensors that do much the same thing. They're limited. They're not going to do everything, but they're very, very accurate. Our first one was for baseball. It's called Motus Throw, and we can get the forces on the elbow on each and every pitch. Now, if you're a baseball fan as well, you know how prevalent elbow injuries and Tommy John surgery is. And while we can't prevent that, we certainly can be an early warning system to tell you, hey, something's going on here. We took that same technology and put it into a product called Motus QB because there's a lot of things that we want to know about quarterbacks and their throwing motion. And we were lucky enough to have the Colts select us to help with Andrew Luck's rehab. We wish it had ended better, and we still think that Andrew will be back over the course of time. But we've got a number of products. We've got Modus Volleyball that's coming out very soon. We've got a concussion product that we're very, very excited about. And a number of these products that we think are really going to help sport in general and hopefully teams at all levels.
And that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on the show, aside from just the general knowledge that you bring to this conversation. But you did say that you had thought that you guys have created a solution for this sideline test. And we've seen, you know, Russell Wilson basically went in, self-checked himself out in the tent and took off. And then even the other day with Brissett, he was hit during the game, came out, took the concussion test from the team doctors, took the independent test, passed both, went back in the game. The same thing happened, I believe, last year, maybe 2 years ago with Luck. It was a similar thing.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And then when they came out after the game, they both had concussion-related symptoms, and then were in the concussion protocol following the game. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was against the Titans, and that was the same game that he originally hurt his shoulder. Because I remember Titans fans constantly complaining, that he had concussion symptoms after the game, you know, that kind of thing. But this, what is it, I guess, more or less, that when you be in the game, you take the concussion protocol, you get a head trauma with it, whether it's a helmet to helmet or a knee to the helmet or something. But then later on, the symptoms really kind of become prevalent. How is that, like, how does that actually work?
Yeah, we don't know. That's the thing, is concussions are something we don't understand. We obviously understand them better than we did last year, better than 10 years ago. You know, when we used to say, oh, your bell got rung, get back in there, rub some dirt on it. Even just 5 years ago, we really had no idea. And even now, you know, I just read a study a couple days ago talking about how activity is the best thing once the initial symptoms have cleared, when normally we've kind of cocooned people and kept them in the dark and said, don't look at screens, don't be out physically active, don't be social, lay in bed in the dark, which is kind of boring.
So what was their thought process behind doing that?
That you're giving the brain rest, basically. You know, as quiet as you could make things, we just don't know how to. You know, first, rest is a difficult concept in recovery. Since you can't see anything, it makes sense on some common sense levels, and there are obviously some science behind it. But we're learning more and more. We're learning about CTE. We still don't have any comprehension about what causes it, how it develops, let alone how to fix it. So we're learning all these things. What happens a lot of times is much in the same way that I always say, if you've ever done something, you're walking through the house and you stub your toe. The initial pain is mind-numbing. All you can think about is, oh my God, I stubbed my toe. This is the worst I've ever felt. You hop up and down, you curse a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then you're, okay, I'm going to take a couple steps. The pain wears off and then you're going. But later on, you realize, you know, my toe still hurts. You sit down for a minute, you're like, why is my toe? Oh, remember when I stubbed my toe an hour ago? Yeah. So there are delayed onset symptoms. Adrenaline is running. You're not paying attention. There's some macho to it as well. You know, do the symptoms actually come on with a delayed onset, or does the reporting come with a delayed onset? I think certainly the fact that they're, let's just say it is delayed reporting. The fact that they're reporting at all is better. Right. They used to disguise it completely. So I think what we have to find is a way to objectively test these players in a way that we can quickly handle. Look, part of the problem with the initial concussion testing is it takes a player off the field. For a quarterback, whether it's Brissett, whether it's Luck, whether it's Wilson, whether it's anybody, taking them off the field, especially in a key situation, could turn the game. So if you say, well, it's going to take 5 minutes and we got to take you back here, that's not going to work. That's just not viable. So if we can come up with a quick, objective test that can at least suggest whether or not further testing is needed, then we're on to something. And we think we're on to something. Again, we're using our sensors. We're using basically its stability. People that have had concussions show a certain symptom in the way they move, and we can detect that in a very accurate and very quick manner. By doing that combined with some quick questions, the same kind of things they're using now, what's called the SCAP-3 test, where you ask them where they are, a couple questions that you actually have to think about rather than, you know, the old red brick Broadway test. Those kind of things really do work. They're very quick, and most importantly, they're objective. there shouldn't be an art to this. There shouldn't be any sort of, well, maybe he's okay in going back. Either he is or he isn't. And that kind of black and white, scientifically proven thing, I think, is very valuable. And you know, I'm not saying we're the only solution. I'm not even saying we're the best solution. I'm saying we think we're onto a solution, and I'd like to, you know, certainly help get it out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, and it's fascinating too. Because I mean, is that really the extent of the sideline test? Because I don't know that many people probably know that really the ins and outs of that either.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people use the term concussion protocol. It's just some sort of mystical thing. There's actually several steps to it. On the sideline, the first thing you're going to see is the athletic trainer. First, he has to spot it, and they're taking care of other people. You heard that the independent evaluator was working on someone else when Brissett came over to the sidelines. The fact is, there's only one of those. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you have two concussions, it can get lost.
Oh, gotcha.
The athletic trainers are, you know, taping people up. They're working on an injury. Somebody may have just injured their ACL. They're doing all this, and they're behind a bunch of really big guys who are lining the sidelines. So they don't always have the best view. The NFL tried to fix that with the spotter. We've seen some of the officials actually call for players to come off the field. And in the case of Wilson, that's what happened. And that's good. Give the NFL full credit for making some progress on this. It's not perfect, but it's certainly a lot better than it was a year ago, 3 years ago. Once the evaluator, usually the athletic trainer, often the team doctor, he's going to look at him. He's going to know him, and he's going to ask him a series of questions. Again, the SCAT-3 test is the normal one. And you know, it's much along the line of who's the president, who are we playing, did we last week? Things that are going to require some actual thought. You can't memorize these answers. And how they react to those is going to be key. Are they slurring their speech? Are they thinking about it? Are their eyes tracking? You're looking for several very specific things. And if you don't like the results, then you go back and there's further tests like the King-Devick test, the impact test. There's a number of others. So that's when they take you back into the locker room to do those further tests. And if you pass those, then you can come back out. And if not, and again, pass is based on your baseline. You take a test at the start of training camp. And as long as you're within a reasonable amount of that, they consider that you don't have symptoms. They don't know whether you have a headache. They don't know whether your pupils are dilated. They don't know whether your brain's still rattling around inside your skull. So again, all of these are objective or subjective tests, when in fact we really need a more objective measure of this. And again, we at Modus think we found one. Again, you can find out a lot more of this on modusglobal.com. The Modus Concussion is what we call it, and you can see a lot more about it there.
Make sure you guys are going and checking that out. This is really fascinating stuff, because I think that we've all heard so much about the concussion protocol. We've heard so much about some of the other points that you're touching on, like you said, the non-contact ACL injuries, all this stuff right here. And it just really, in the game of football, especially at the NFL level, it's something that just it continues to never get lost in the game. There's always somebody with a serious injury somewhere close to a team or a game or something. There's just something. It's always a topic of conversation in there. And any time that they can use what they're doing to try to get these things minimized, as far as like the things like the concussion issues and the ACL, I mean, I think all the better. Is what would you say as far as with Andrew Luck going over to Europe for all that? Does that seem like a smart? I'll just ask like kind of a bland question. Does that seem like a smart move for Andrew?
Yeah, sir. I don't want to cast any judgment on the treatments he's seeking, but I think every Colts fan and everybody out there following this wants him to get the best possible treatment wherever that's from. And he's sought opinions from some of the best doctors in the world, Dr. Safran, who did the surgery, Dr. Elitrosh and Dr. Andrews, who consulted on this recently. Those are three of the best orthopedic surgeons in the world. And, you know, there are some over there in Europe. And remember, Andrew has you know, if you told me Tom Brady was doing this, I'd kind of look at this a little more askance than I do at Andrew, just because Andrew, he grew up in Germany for a period of time. He's very comfortable over there. You know, it's his second home. He's a huge soccer fan. And so that he would go over there first to Europe and talk to some European doctors, I don't find that unusual. And highly, you know, there are some great doctors over there. Don't get me wrong. And again, like I said before, the Europeans and Australians are ahead of us in terms of sports science, some manual therapies, some rehab protocols. We just don't use them over here. Mm-hmm. The second thing is there's a process called Regenikine, which you know, everybody thinks is why he's going over there. We've seen
this
before.
Stem cell yep. stuff.
It's not stem cells specifically. It's basically they take your blood, they put it in a centrifuge, they add a couple things to it. You know, if it were you or me, a lot of places, not Regenikine, but Orthokine actually does use HGH at times because mm-hmm. you and I aren't tested the way that Andrew Luck or Kobe Bryant or Peyton Manning when he was playing were.
Right.
So you obviously can't use that. But there's some things they put in there. We don't know exactly what they do. That's part of their business plan is that they're the only ones that do it. And so they spin it, they add some things, they wait like 24 hours and then they put it back in. This is done in America, but so many people have gone over there. And I think there's something of a follower mentality to it. You know, a lot of people, when they have an ACL, they think, well, where'd Adrian Peterson go? I want to go there.
Right.
If you blew out your arm, you'd want to know where Jim Andrews was. So there's a lot of things that's following. And because they've had such success over there with the process, you know, Peyton Manning had it on his neck. Kobe Bryant had it on his legs. You know, hundreds of athletes have gone over there. And so it's the world leader. And if you're going to have a procedure, might as well go to the world leader. Again, there are places in the U.S. that do this, and there's some athletes, some well-known athletes that have done it here in the U.S. So I think this is just a comfort level for Andrew. And again, that he's seeking world-class opinions, which certainly I don't think anybody can argue with. You know, if he wants to go to Africa and find the best witch doctor, if he wants to go to Haiti and find the best voodoo priest, awesome. Find the best in the world. I don't care. Whatever works, man.
Yep. And the Colts fans feel the same way. We don't care if he comes back with some crazy voodoo doll, as long as he's
exactly.
ready to grow or ready to go.
Exactly. I mean. Exactly. And I think that's what we have to do. You know, as long as he's reasonably ethical about it and passes his drug test, I think you have to do whatever you can do to get back.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And not only that, but there's so many options out there that, you know, it's really just about getting that person's body back to where it was. It's not about creating an advantage. It's about getting that body rebuilt to where it was. And I
yeah,
think that's
exactly.
something that people kind of forget when they hear HGH or they hear stem cell research and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I shouldn't bring that into the conversation. I know people think stem cells and some of the performance-enhancing drugs, but I would point to, and this is somebody that Andrew has talked to quite a bit, is Drew Brees, who came back from a devastating, much worse shoulder injury. And his shoulder, you know, Jim Andrews has told the story that he opened up his shoulder and he looked like a grenade had gone off inside there. It had to put things back together and hope for the best. Shoulders are really difficult because there's so many things, you know, an elbow or a knee is basically a hinge. And I'm not the handiest guy in the world, but I can figure out a hinge. Shoulder does so many things. A hip does so many things. Anytime you have one of those ball and socket joints, you're going to have ligaments and muscles and capsules and tendons and blood vessels and nerves and muscle. It's just hideously complex. And Neil Elitrosh always says, you know, putting a shoulder back together is like putting together a jigsaw puzzle without the box top. You just don't know what it looked like and what it's supposed to look like. But Drew Brees certainly came back.
Yeah.
Certainly has come back well. And if you take a look at his career, you'd say he was better. But physically, he's probably not. Physically, he's probably missing 10-15% of what he might have been, but he's been able to make up for that in other ways. And I think that's, you know, certainly Peyton Manning did that in his Denver career. And I think Andrew Luck is going to have the opportunity to do that next year.
It's kind of funny. I mean, the situation with Brees, as far as that goes, when he went to Miami and the doctors there did not pass him, you know, and then he moved on. And, you know, that's obviously, you know, it's all history now. But
it was really
interesting. You can get the two completely different opinions depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, fun. Here's an interesting fact. Andrew Luck, at this stage, has not failed a physical. because he wasn't put on an injured reserve, he came off PUP. He must have at some point, and we're not sure exactly which, at least I'm not, that he had to have passed a physical. And again, these physicals, sometimes it's just like, yep, he's breathing. And sometimes they're very, very detailed. But at some point, you know, at least from the NFL technical standpoint, he had to have passed one. I have been told that I haven't been able to confirm this, that he has not yet failed a physical, but in all likelihood, he's going to at some point. There's an exit physical at the end of the year where everybody is checked because, you know, some of those players aren't going to be back and you don't want to be on the hook for their medical care. Right. So those exit physicals are taken very, very seriously. And I'm told that Andrew hasn't taken his because I don't know why. Maybe they don't want him to fail it yet.
Right. I wonder what sort of an impact would that make then, should he feel or fail?
None. It's not like they're going to cut him and try to come up with a medical settlement. But with some of the players, you know, it's more for – people don't think about this, but it's more for workers' comp. Workers' compensation is a major insurance expense for most teams because this is their job. So they have to take care of that. They have to pay the premiums. Often, if it's a work-related injury, because it's a state-level program, it gets involved. And then it comes into, you know, where did the injury take place? You know, the Colts don't always play in Indiana. If the injury took place in Tennessee or Florida, there are different laws in place. And you know, it's not the same in football. I'm not as familiar with it. But in baseball, basically is you broke it, you bought it. You know, if you had a player, and just for example, let's say he had a career-ending knee injury, you know, for local fans, let's say Kyle Schwarber's knee injury had been so severe that he never came back. The Cubs would own his medical care for that knee for the rest of his life. And workers' comp would take care of some of that, but over and above, they would basically be on the hook forever. The last team that has somebody owns it. It's a little bit the same, the non-guaranteed contract. There's some differences in football. I'm not as familiar with it, but they definitely have to take it into consideration. It's one of those things that nobody thinks about. Nobody thinks about workers' comp in the NFL.
No, that's crazy. And you know what? That would be an absolute bear. I cannot believe that they have to deal. I mean, workers' comp is one of the worst things that you can, if you ever have to contact, you know, your workforce development or whatever it is for workman's comp, however, oh my God, that is the worst process in America for sure. You are not getting any quick responses for that.
Yeah, but the alternative is not good either. So at least it's good that it's there. You know, people don't think about, you know, health insurance for teams. I can remember, again, this is a baseball thing, talking to a team and I was working with them, consulting with them on a project, and they had a list of all the doctors that they had. You know, you think about the team orthopedist and, you know, maybe a dentist, but they had a list of, it had to be 50 doctors. And I was just looking down the list and I was like, an optometrist. Okay, I get that. Some player's going to need glasses. You're going to need to test their eyes. A vascular surgeon. You would think maybe they don't have that. But then again, the whole Zach Miller situation, you realize that might come up and have to be treated. And what a terrible injury that was. And an amazing medical story that they saved his leg.
Right.
But also one of them, this was the funny one. It stood out to me. I was like, they had a gynecologist on there. And I was like, why would you have an obstetrician for a baseball team? And the team doctor just looked up at me and he goes, because they have wives. And I was like, oh yeah, it makes sense. So they think of everything.
That's crazy. It's genius, but it's crazy. You just wouldn't have, like you said, why would you have one of those there? What purpose does that serve? That's crazy. Will, before I get you out of here, man, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Andrew Luck situation, just kind of in general terms. Is there really, with the procedure that he had done, with the situation that he had with his shoulder, and everything that's coincided since, is there really anything else that the Colts could have done? Because there's so many people saying they flopped this, they screwed this process up from front to back. And maybe a little clarity as to kind of how this situation kind of builds itself to be where it's at right now.
Yeah, I don't want to say they screwed up. And I don't believe we can actually say that. That's not to say they didn't. but right. we don't have enough information from, you know, I think I watch this closer than anybody, from the, almost the second this injury happened, to now. I've been following this story very, very closely. I'm very concerned for Andrew. As somebody who lives in Indianapolis, I like it when Colts fans are happy, because that's pretty much everybody. Right. I want him to succeed, because he's a likable guy and a heck of a talent. So I don't see any evidence on either side that they screwed it up or didn't screw it up. What I see is that this is one of those unfortunate times when a surgery did not go as well, or not necessarily the surgery, but the surgery and the rehab and the process of going from an injury to a return, it didn't happen the way we wanted to. And that happens sometimes. Something goes wrong. Something doesn't progress as quickly as we want. There was a setback somewhere along the way. The biggest failure to me is not that he's not back. It's that they disrespected the fans along the way. Mm-hmm. You know this as well as anybody. The Colts fans out there are as passionate a fan base as you're going to find. I always find it amazing that I see so many license plates as I go down the street, and that, you know, it's a Colts license plate with a helmet, or that it's, you know, a Colts fan vanity plate, that you get on Twitter and somebody's name is Colts Bob 22 or one of these,
right.
You know, and you see people with jerseys and, you know, babies being born named Peyton, all this passion, not to mention the money and the time that people put into this. And for the Colts organization to kind of take that passion and trust and toss it away by not giving them any facts, by kind of glossing over this, I don't think Mr. Irsay was lying when he thought he was going to get back. I think maybe he was misinformed. But I think if they had just put somebody up front that understood the process, if they had just let the athletic trainers talk once.
Right.
In Kansas City, Rick Burkholder will come out and tell you everything. When Dontari Poe hurt his back and needed surgery, I can remember the press conference, and Rick came out and he was like, Dontari has this. We've been dealing with this. We've been giving him therapy. It didn't work. It exacerbated. So we sent him to this doctor and this doctor. He liked the second doctor, so he's going to have surgery with him on this date. We're going to get him back here in Kansas City here, and it's going to take 6 weeks. And if his back returns to normal strength, we think we'll have him back by the. And it was unbelievably detailed. And last I checked, the Kansas City Chiefs are one of the better teams in the NFL. They're not at any disadvantage because they let their athletic trainer give the information to the fans.
Right.
Well, not only that,
Ballard's from that. So, I mean, you would think that that would be something that would follow him.
I keep hoping this. I haven't seen any evidence of it, but I keep hoping this. Again, results count. And the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the best medical staffs around. And so, you know, if they wanted to pull away one of those guys, Rick Burkholder or one of his staff, I'd think that'd be a very good move. Hmm. But again, I think it comes down to the fact that because they didn't give any information, you know, for most of the, I talked about this on the radio, where I was like, you know, he might be back tomorrow and he might never be back. There was this, you know, infinite run of possibilities. And because of that, you know, all the rumors came in. He broke his neck playing, you know, he was on a snowboard. He was doing this, he was doing that. My brother's sister's cousin was in an Uber with somebody who told me that, you know, he had another surgery. There are all these rumors because there was this void of information. Simple information, like he had surgery and now something's gone wrong, so he's gone to another rehab professional. One of the best in the world, by the way, Kevin Wilk. You know, that if they just told us that in August, I could have saved so much time and effort explaining of what we didn't know. So this is one where I think the Colts really screwed up in terms of how they handled it, rather than how they actually handled Andrew.
Yeah.
That part, I don't know. Maybe they made mistakes, maybe they didn't, but I don't think from the outside we can say. We didn't get the result, or they didn't get the result they wanted. But from the outside, they certainly screwed up, and they lost a lot of credibility with the fans. I think when you look at the Jacoby Brissett situation, do they have any trust in the trust bank? With the Vontae Davis situation, do they have any trust in the trust bank? No, because they burned it all up telling us nothing about Andrew Luck.
That's a fantastic point, too. And it really is, because a lot of people, you know, they continue to say that they lied to us. They tried to sell extra tickets. But your point is exactly what I think that 99% of the people who just really want – look, you have press conferences for a reason, not to just mumbo-jumbo through this. Why not, instead of having Pagano up there go through 100,000 metaphors a day, why not actually put somebody up there who's going to give – some solid information? He doesn't have to explain everything in layman's terms to the listeners or the fans. But I mean, you know, and not only that, the only time they make Andrew Luck available is when they, take him off PUP, and are not take him off PUP, but actually activate him, And I mean, and stuff like that. Yeah. We haven't heard anything from Andrew Luck outside of that. And definitely nothing, like you said, from the medical team. I think that would have been fantastic. Just that little bit of information would have been a huge difference for people.
I think the other thing, the key in what you said there is we haven't heard from Andrew, which tells me something. You know, if there's any one positive sign I see from this, it's the fact that there haven't been any leaks at all.
Right.
You know, until they actually said, I think 2 weeks ago when Ballard offhandedly confirmed who the surgeon was, I knew through sources I was 99% sure of who did the surgery, but I literally couldn't confirm it. I talked to friends of the surgeon who said, yeah, he probably did, but I don't know. I talked to friends of Andrew Luck. I talked to people within the organization, and nobody would actually confirm it for me. So I never actually said the name Saffron out loud in a lot of things. I was right along the way, so I guess I could have, but I actually like to source things and make things, do things the right way. But Andrew hasn't leaked either. You know, there are a lot of sides to this. Nobody inside the Colts leaked. Nobody outside the Colts leaked, which is often difficult. You know, nobody from the surgeons leaked. Nobody from the rehab leaked. But Andrew hasn't gone against him. And if Andrew felt differently than the organization, if he thought this had been mishandled, look, he's been around. His father's been around. His agents have really been around. If they thought something was wrong, they'd be leaking. And, you know, what's the worst leak we have? Is that Andrew's in Europe, which was most likely somebody who saw him get on a plane. There's not really a whole lot you can do about that. This idea that Andrew wants out of Indianapolis, that he's arguing or thinks the Colts have mishandled this, I don't see any sign of that from the outside.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah, you're right too. It just seems like a lot of this has been so quiet, and it just makes you wonder, with as many things that leak throughout the league day to day, that if there was something that was worthwhile from this entire situation from Andrew, you would assume that there'd be a leak. I mean, I think that really, honestly, 99% of the Colts fans just simply wanted to hear, hey, I think I'm going to be okay. And not hear it from Chuck Pagano that Andrew said this. They want to hear it from Andrew Luck just to see him and get a visual of him and have him look confident when he says it. I think that that's...
Yeah, they wanted proof of life.
Yep, exactly.
Andrew holding a copy of the Indy Star so we know what day it is. and it would have had it. But, you're exactly right.
Absolutely. That's crazy. Will, excellent stuff from you, man. Can't thank you enough for jumping on with us today.
No problem. Anytime.